welcome to the Women's Soccer Coaching Podcast. This is where we take a deep dive into the challenges and opportunities faced by those who coach in the women's game. I'm Steph Fairbairn, and I'll introduce our special guest in just a moment. This podcast accompanies the December issue of Women's Soccer Coaching Magazine, which is available to subscribers right now. As well as the usual session plans and practices to inspire you, including a special Christmas-themed practice, Wendy Arnett, assistant women's soccer coach at Culver Stockton College and coach with Northeast United SC, gives tips for staying relevant with your players as the age gap increases, and Gary Cairns of Celtic FC Girls Academy Under 14s discusses the importance of keeping communication simple. We also learn about a London project, Muslima Sports Association, offering Muslim women a safe and positive environment to participate in sport from chair and founder Yashmin Harun. The theme of this issue, though, is talent identification. Chris Hall, a university and ENCL coach in the US, explores whether we talent spot too early and the pitfalls of doing so, while Leicester City's Claire Burrows looks at the use of data to inform talent ID. Former cover star Yolanda Thomas discusses the hugely important topic of race, ethnicity, and biases in talent ID. And from one cover star to another, our lead interviewee this month is US Soccer's Director of Talent ID, Mirelle Van Rybrook. I caught up with Mirelle to talk about what talent really is, how US Soccer goes about identifying, monitoring, and developing it, and the coach's role in creating an environment where talent can grow. Mirelle, welcome to the Women's Soccer Coaching Podcast.
Yeah, nice to be on it.
No, really nice to have you. I was wondering if you don't mind if we could start by you giving us three definitions, one for talent, one for talent identification, and one for talent development.
Ooh, I think the first one, talent, is going to be really hard. I don't think there is one definition for talent. So maybe that would be the answer. So it's very context specific. And it has also, like you can be talent. You can maybe develop talent. Or develop in a certain area where you become talented. So it could be a predisposition. So maybe that's it, two words to talent. And then talent ID, for me, it's really like long-term. So it's really the monitoring of the development of players long-term and then see if they have a certain potential. But definitely the long-term process is really important within talent ID. And then the last one, development, for me is then just player development, like players get the opportunity in really good environments to develop their skill sets, no matter the level. So I think that's for me really important. And really the learning is a big part in that one, but also ultimately gaining some sort of like autonomy so that they have the ability to take ownership of their own journey.
So all of that considered, tell us a bit more about what your role, so your director of talent identification at the US Soccer Federation, tell us what that role encompasses.
So basically, I'll probably also bring it back to our mission because that pretty much tells what my role is. So it's identifying and monitoring players for our youth national teams. Also trying to evolve the youth landscape, or at least scouting within the youth landscape, by creating awareness and on talent ID, but also educate on talent identification. So basically, my role has three areas, which is youth national team scouting, talent ID education, and it's supporting members and clubs within the US in their talent ID initiatives.
So if we start with, I suppose, the youth national team strand, when identifying talent there, what is the team looking for? What are you looking for?
So basically what we defined is we've defined key qualities. So we really narrow down like talent, because like talent, the concept of talent, of course, can be, and the definition is very generic. So basically what we've done is like we brought it back to talent in sports, talent in soccer, and then brought it back to, okay, what does talent look on an international level, or what do players look at an international level? So we developed the key qualities, and we have six key qualities that we're looking for. And then basically also what we've done is we've got position profiles, and those are like six different profiles that we define. And within those profiles, there are like different categories, as in player actions, behaviors. Those are things that we're looking for. Also, again, because we're in youths, we're looking at youth players. So also knowing that some areas still need to be developed or can be developed. So it's never like a finished product. And I think that's also one of the things that will reflect back in the key qualities.
What are those six qualities, if you're happy to share them?
Yeah, definitely. So the qualities that we defined, and it's really based on, we did a big project. We had key qualities already before COVID, but then within COVID, we did a big project with our technical department. So with the talent ID managers and also with the national team coaches, both on the men and on the women's side. And we really looked at a lot of video of world-class players and the behavior that they show. And also looked at like research that had been done. And then looking at like, okay, how is the game gonna evolve towards the future, and what would that look like for players? So our six key qualities are game understanding and decision making, which means basically the ability to read the situations, anticipate, and make quick decisions under pressure. Then the second key quality, and they're like not really in a particular order the way I mentioned them, but the second key quality is responsibility and initiative, which really focuses on self-regulation. And it's really the taking responsibility for your own learning, development, and performance. And that's an ability that you can, it's a lot like off the field. And then the third one, it's a growth mindset and winning mentality. So basically, it's also the continuous drive to improve and to compete. Which is something that you're able to see on the field, but also off the field. So it has to do like with focus, intensity. It has to do with motivation, determination, and it also has to do with the emotional stability and the control. So that was the third one. And then the fourth one is technical execution, which is basically ball mastery and skills under pressure. And then the fifth one is physical execution. It's really focusing on movement skills and fitness. So for us, it's more about like how somebody moves, you know, like is it efficiently agile, coordination, balance, than actually like really like the power and the strength. Because also we know like when we're talking about youth players, depending on if you're early mature or late mature, like how that presents itself. And then the sixth one is for us like really like a key one is the is learning ability, and that's really like the capacity to adapt to a higher level. So those are like the six ones, and then most of the time what we're also looking at is the exceptional quality of a player, which could be of course in those six areas, but that's also something that we will describe. And then I think not to forget, and I already mentioned it, is like all those six key qualities and the behaviors and the actions are again related to like the ages and stages of players. So not all behavior already is there, but there is of course like different behavior actions that you're able to develop, because we really believe in, yes, you might have specific genetic markers, but ultimately, you need to be in the right environment in order to develop things. And I think that's the most important thing.
I was going to ask about the ages and stages. Do you have, I suppose, benchmarks you would expect players to be hitting of those qualities when they're at certain ages, or is it not that prescriptive?
It's not that prescriptive. So we do benchmark and we do compare. So when we're like, so for example, I was in at an event like this weekend with like a lot of games. So we have a lot of events through the year, like, and those have been organized by different members and leagues. So we go there and then, so basically what we do have comparisons and benchmarks. So those have been like players that have been in YNT and have done like on a good level, so basically what we do is like we create like video. Of course we've defined those players and those are like benchmarks for us. So then it's like comparing players like on the same position, same, sometimes like same age. We try to compare them. Also again, cognizant of the fact if somebody is early mature, like late mature. So that's how we like compare. And then what another thing that we do is we just recently had the World Cup under 17 in India. We had the World Cup under 20 in Costa Rica. So what I do there as well is look at other nations, look at the key players for those nations, and then compare those players also with our players, but also to see like, okay, do we see certain trends? I go even like deeper comparing also pathways because pathways of players are really important. And that also sometimes defines like where a player is at a certain stage. So those are like things that we're trying to do.
You mentioned environment there.
Yeah.
What makes a really positive growth environment for players?
So I think there are like different success factors. So first of all, like when you look at more like a really like a good environment, like if you look at like a learning and a challenging performance environment, there are different components. So one of it is the player, but it's also the players around that player. So it's basically like the players, the best players with the best players, also from more like a like-minded like mindset. So do those players challenge each other, you know, to become better? So that's one important factor. Then it's the best coaches. So it's the quality of the coaches. I think licenses can say something, but it doesn't always say everything. But of course, like when somebody has got their licenses, then they've at least gone through development, they've gone through learning, and hopefully they're also in that mindset of growth mindset and also have the ability to give ownership back, you know, like to players, because I think that's an important one, that players have the ability to take ownership. So that autonomy is really important. Then the third one is also program. So your program is important, which is like the training, the games that you play, competition, but even also what does your week look like? What is you know like the content of your week? So that's an important one. And then is the culture. So the culture is important. What kind of culture is being created like within that environment? Is it really like you know like focused like on the player and that the player has the ability to take ownership? Of course like in certain phases. And then the other one is the you know like how they organize their life. And training situations. So you're talking about like load, rest, recovery. It's about sleep. It's about nutrition. It's about like mental well-being, belonging. And then another one is still like the some sort of like the performance environment, how that one is created. So I think that's a little bit how you can define if there is if it's a good environment. For players. And one of the things as a coach, the behavior that you could show is definitely is stimulate, inspire players. It's about giving them autonomy. It's about like you know like giving them ownership of their own thinking. I think those are yeah important aspects.
I'll definitely come back to, I think, the role of the coach. But
Yeah.
we talked about the six qualities, and then we're talking about environments. Is there anything that is specifically linked to the female game or that is female specific within those?
I'm not sure. I don't know if it's always like specific to the female player, because I think everyone is in a way unique. So, and I think that's also one of the things, is that you have to give individual attention and recognition to players so that you can create like some sort of belonging. So in that sense, also the framework, the structure that you offer, I mean, like the game of soccer is similar. So I don't think those things are like different. Maybe in some ways, sometimes the approach, the culture that has been created, there might be like some differences, and I think there are differences in a way between boys and girls. But that's also more from a developmental psychological perspective, that some way like the brains are a little bit differently wired. So in that sense, there is like this different approach. On the other hand, I do also believe that it's some boys and girls are very close to each other, and sometimes, like boys and girls are different. So yes, from a like a genetic perspective, there are differences, as in like how, like muscle definition, like hormones, like those kind of things that of course impact sometimes, that impact the game. But I think then you get like really, you become more like towards like the focus on the personal attention and the recognition of everyone being different.
I suppose if we stick with that, of everyone being different and everyone has their different needs, how can coaches support all of those different needs and those different kind of areas of improvement, different strengths? How can coaches go about supporting individual players on their journey?
I think there is always a framework, so there's always a structure. So I think as a coach, there's always like you have to offer that framework and that structure within, like certain things happen. So a lot, of course, also is in a way related to the vision and the philosophy, like of the club, the DNA of the club. Like how do you want to play, your style of play, principles. Like how do you want to develop the game? And I think within that is having, like purely attention for the strengths, for players. So, and I think that will be something that comes back, of course, in their individual development plan. So what are like strengths? What are things that they need to improve in context, of course, like within, their style of play, the DNA, like how you want to develop players. So it will come back in that relationship, that individual, and then of course always in the context of the team, because as a player, as an individual, you develop in the context of the team, so you develop also in relation to like other players. So that's the easiest answer. And of course I know like it's difficult, like in like when you're coaching and when you have like this big group of players, and then like how do you spend, like how do you spend your time? So that's why I think it's also really important that you learn them, or like give them tools so that they are able to take ownership for their own journey, but also that they're able to think for themselves, but also get a really good idea of like what's being expected from them, like within the field, like within the style of play, within their position. So that they can actually take responsibility for that as well. And I think I know, like, I mean, if you give that to players and you give them tools, they're really capable of doing that. So those are like things that I experienced, like, in real life, like within the US, and like when we work with players, it's like they're really capable of doing that. And yes, sometimes things go wrong, and I think that's okay, because one of the things is that it's really important to learn from that and reflect on it, on that experience or on that action, so that the next time, like they're able to, like to improve and to show different things. Because if it's always like being told what they need to do, then how on earth are they able to do that and think for themselves, to, like towards the future?
I wanted to ask that because obviously, the higher levels of the game, you make a mistake, you're at risk of getting dropped. I'm not saying that's the right thing, but sometimes that's how it works at the top level. When you're looking at assessing and developing talent, what do you think is like a good time window to actually have a good picture of what someone's actually like, rather than making a reactive decision based on one game or one experience with them?
We never make a decision on one game. So when you look at our process, I already mentioned it's like long term. So it's long term monitoring and then taking in consideration the environment that they're from, but also relative age and growth and maturation. So those are things you have to take in consideration. And those are like challenges and constraints for us, of course. And there are more challenges and constraints when we're looking at players long term. So that's why that long term is important, because it could be the environment that they're in, or like just the game conditions on the day. It could be, we already spoke about it, relative age. Like, are they early mature, late mature? It's about like growth and maturation. It's about even about like their learning ability. It's about like self-regulated skill sets that they have that already impact. And another thing is also bias, for example, because we're all, unfortunately, subjective human beings who have our own subjective reality. And when we're looking at players, we try to take out as much as possible, and try to look at those players from an objective, in an objective way. And although we know we still stay subjective, we try to look at like what we see. And that's why you can't do that only like on one game. So we monitor players from under 14 until under 23. And we see them like multiple times in a year. So we actually say always like we need to have like a minimum of like five reports in a season, to from like spread out over the season, like to be able to see their development. Most of the players, we even have like way more reports. If they've been like in our youth national team system, we have even more in depth, of course, like about those players. And then we ha organize our ID centers where we can bring like different players together so that we can also have them play together, but also have the ability to compare them. And then they stay basically in our system, and we just, yeah, keep monitoring them over the years. And then ultimately, of course, like over the years, then if somebody like doesn't really, I mean, everybody develops, but doesn't develop like at a certain pace, and there are like so many other players that develop like quicker, then it's just like we stop following certain players. But still, everyone is like in our system. And like sometimes it could even happen that later on, and that probably also has a little bit to do with our pathway and our landscape, sometimes can pop up. So that it's someone, like was at a young age in our, we monitored, there was not really like a certain progression. And then ultimately got, for example, got injured, didn't play for a while, then got the opportunity to get in a different environment, maybe even a better environment, and was still able to then fulfill a certain potential.
You mentioned reports there as well. How much are you talking to clubs in terms of working on development plans together and supporting a player together?
So, what we try to do is at least like once a season, have like meetings, or like it's mostly like more like webinars that we've started to do like with clubs. So we invite them for webinars. We share with them our key qualities, our profiles, so they are familiar with that. We also ask for recommendations. So we send an email to each club. We connect with each club. Of course, like also in specific areas, because we have to be strategic so we're not able to, cover like all the clubs, but definitely clubs on who operate in a certain environment or on a certain level, which are still also still a lot of clubs, I must actually say. So we send them the recommendation tool, so they have the ability to fill out like their recommendations. We do like the webinars with them where we share information about like our process, how we work. When we have our ID centers, we always follow up afterwards with the club, share with them our post communication, what we've done in the ID center, and share with them the video of the game. And then we ask them to go back with the player and you know, like reflect on that game. We also ask players to, because they also have access to the game, to go back, look at the key qualities, look at the profiles, and then reflect on their own performance or their own actions, and then create like little video clips and share that with us. And then also they have, and it's all their ownership, right? They don't have to do that, but also ask them to keep us posted, like, you know, like if they play games with their clubs, a lot of the games are being filmed. And then so that they can keep us posted as well about their development. So that's one thing that we do with the clubs. And then the players that have been in our youth national team camps, the youth national team coach always follows up with the clubs, also with the post communication, and the club receives the clips from the players. Then the coaches have the ability to connect with the coach and dive a little bit deeper. They receive individual, like a personal evaluation, which is more like also used as an IDP. So then they know areas that they, you know, can work on and what we're looking for. So those are things that we're doing.
No, that's a lot of things that you're doing.
Yeah.
I think as well for these players, they're obviously investing in their future, and it's a lot, you know, it's a lot of investment. How, you know, obviously not every player is going to make it to the level they hope they would make it to. How do you make sure they're equipped if that is the case and it doesn't quite happen for them?
Yeah, so it's funny. I actually had, like, last week I did a big presentation for like 80 players, boys and girls. And also talking about this aspect, I think the most important thing for us is that your identity is not only being a soccer player. You're so much more than, you know, than that soccer player. So having a really good understanding of that is really important, so that your identity is not only connected to being like that soccer player, but that you're like a full human being with a lot of other strengths. So also trying to make them aware that, yes, they pursue this dream, but only a few will ever actually achieve it. And there are so many factors that impact that, so that they are aware of that. But also that on this journey that they're going through, that everything they learn, the tools that they get, that they can use those things also in other areas. So maybe they might not become like that, you know, player due to circumstances or whatever. Maybe they just, you know, you don't know. I mean, so many things can happen, but maybe they can become a coach. Maybe they become a referee. Maybe they become like a board member. Maybe they become like a general manager, or maybe they, you know, like go like a totally different area. But, you know, like that, at least that, like the journey that they've gone through, that they look back at it like from a positive perspective. And that they see like, hey, I've learned so many things that I can use now for the rest of my life. So creating that awareness, but also giving them like tools, like how they can do like goal setting, how they can make their goals smart, like how they can provide like little steps, you know, like giving ownership to them, developing their self-regulated skills. It's just like really important. But ultimately, other things as in like, okay, yeah, dealing with pressure, playing international games, just like already being like, even like playing in the ID center with other best players, like how do you deal with pressure? You know, like how do you deal with that? But yeah, and then of course, like our, if you're in the youth national team and you're on those youth national team World Cups, it's like the experience that they gain in those environments, yeah, is so important. And I think we're trying to, yeah, create awareness for that, have sessions about like some of these different subjects. Yeah, and hopefully we're able to give them, provide them with some sort of tools that, you know, like they're able to, you know, manage, deal, cope with things.
Do you think that's an important thing that all coaches should be aware of, how we're providing a well-rounded experience for our players?
Yeah, I think that's really important. It's something that for me has always been in my philosophy and my vision, back in the day, like that I worked for the Dutch Federation. That was like always the first thing, one of the first things that was on my slides and presentation is like, we are developing human beings. And yes, soccer is our core, but we just also have to make sure that ultimately They become good human beings and they can use the skills that they've learned in also in other areas. So I think for every coach, that's a responsibility. It's just even like for the clubs, I mean, you spend so many time with those players. So I think, yeah, it's really an important aspect to yeah, make sure that you are doing a good job in that kind of area, and that players have a, you know, at least have a positive experience. And of course, they might fail, they might make mistakes, you know, like things can happen, but that ultimately they're able to deal with that.
And obviously with the US team, with the Netherlands team, you know, there's some incredible role models and players who have made it to the top level. How important are those role models for the youths going through the system?
I think it's really important because back in the days we didn't have those role models. So and now, like having those role models, seeing what is possible for girls is just like can be so inspiring. So I think it's a huge importance, and I think sometimes even like not all we always or like not always everyone realizes like how important that is. And of course, like you know, like even like the bigger stars, they realize that. But I think even like on other levels, just it's maybe not even only like the players, it's also like female coaches, you know, on a specific in a specific area, but even like female general managers, female technical directors, female referees, just female you know, like board members, female club owners. I think it's just like showing that there is perspective, that there is a possibility, that there is at least something that you're able to pursue. I think that's really important.
And over the course of your career, have you seen that change a lot, what the landscape looks like for females in the game?
Yeah, I definitely did. I remember just like, you know, when I was young, you know, though you didn't have those females. I think the first ones that I really got exposed to was Mia Hamm, Brandi Chastain, you know, definitely Mia Hamm. So those were like more like the first ones. And you didn't have that many examples. For me, I had examples in other sports. So for example, in tennis, like Steffi Graf, for example. So I think it's really important. And I've seen it change. And of course, definitely also due to social media. I think the influence of social media, sometimes in a bad way, but it could also, of course, like in a positive way, so that you can actually see, you know, like all those different role models. So yeah, definitely see that change. And of course, more and more females have come into the game, and I think that's really important. One of the things I feel that still needs to change, and we can do a better job, is also giving females more experience on a higher level, because ultimately, in order to achieve a certain quality, you need to be in a certain environment where you're also being challenged. You need to get that experience, need to reflect on that experience, and also to become like a better, you know, like a better coach, or maybe a better general manager or a better technical director. So I think it's really important to give females, you know, like that opportunity. Yes, and some are not yet there, but if they have a really high learning ability and they're very motivated and passionate, you know, like we should give females also a quicker opportunity. And I do sometimes see, yeah, that we sometimes have like we hesitate then, because we when we're looking at a female, we see like, oh, this is she's not here yet, she's not doing this yet. Whereas like sometimes with males, we give them like an easier opportunity. Whereas I think like, yeah, that feels really sometimes strange. But I mean, like things improve. So yeah, hopefully this will accelerate and continues.
You're talking about talent ID across all the roles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I mean, like, of course, like within in US soccer, I'm responsible for talent identification and monitoring players. But over the past so many years, I've been in, of course, in different areas, different roles within soccer, and of course, I have my own experiences. So I'm very in like an advocate for like females in soccer, but all like in the different areas. So it's more like from a holistic perspective is really important for me.
Well, let's finish then with a question because we have a lot of coaches, female coaches listening to this. They'll be working at various levels of the game, but say they now want to go away and think more about how they can improve in the areas of talent ID and development. What would you be saying to them about how they can try and upskill and better support their players?
Of course, like get experience in those areas. Within clubs, within the club that maybe if they're not in a club, get into like a club. Sometimes maybe some sort of like education. There could be like courses where you can get. There might be webinars. It's also like talking with like with different people. But I think like definitely trying to get like working in those areas. So for example, like in our scouting, so in my job, like we have scouts and we have a lot of we have a network of somewhere around like 80 scouts in the country. And in that sense, we have a lot of like female scouts. And for them, it's also like a sometimes like a first step in like working in this specific area. We have them on our talent scout course, so they gain more like the deeper insight in what is talent identification, what is talent reporting, and then from here they sometimes like get opportunities to to go in other areas, and some of them already like work in clubs, getting a better understanding of like what is needed, like they can get into different areas within their club. I think there are like a lot of different ways. The most important thing is that you're open, you have a growth mindset, you're willing to learn, and also that you have a just a really good like work ethic, as in wanted to do like several things and creating connections, building networks. I think that's really important, and I see that also like now within our network, it's like we start to get more and more people, and everyone knows somebody else. So like from that perspective, like things grow, but it just like takes it takes time. So different approaches, and I think it depends also, of course, the goal and the ambition of the person. Because that ultimately determines or drives the pathway or the journey that you need to go through.
That was Mirelle Van Rijbroek, Director of Talent ID at US Soccer. Thanks to Mirelle for her time and insights. Don't forget, the December issue of Women's Soccer Coaching is available now to subscribers. Visit womenssoccercoaching.com to subscribe. I'm Steph Fairbairn. Thanks again for listening to the Women's Soccer Coaching Podcast.